Okay, wonderful. Thank you very, very much for coming. Okay, does everybody have a sheet? Yes?
No.
There's some questions that I printed out before the sources. To allow people to think about it a little bit. The five bulleted questions that begin this this sheet. Okay. What I want to talk about is basically secular morality, which is a sense that a specific set of rights and wrongs and correct actions, incorrect actions, that can be based on a worldview that doesn't include Kodesh Baruch Hu. That's what I mean by secular morality. Right? The human being can create it. It doesn't mean that there is no Kodesh Baruch Hu, Kodesh Chalila. But it just means, but it often is held by people who don't. But it just sort of says, I can create a set of what is right and wrong without reference to Kadosh Baruch Hu, without reference to Kadosh Baruch Hu telling me what is right and wrong. I don't want to bring in other names, but that's fine. Secular morality, the way I just did. And the question I want to ask is, first of all, is it valid? Can you create such a morality? In other words, there's a thing. Well, there's lots of non-religious people, irreligious people, atheists, who are very moral people. I say, yeah, but they're being inconsistent. it's a cultural leftover from times when everybody believed in right and wrong, and they, not everybody.
When was there a time when everyone believed in right and wrong?
No, when everybody believed that Kadosh Baruch Hu was telling them, right? You know, then the vast majority of opinions said that God told there was God. That's over from Christian period, from period when basically mankind was almost 100% theistic in one form or another. And it's a cultural leftover, and in fact it's going down generation by generation. And the brothers Karamazov, Dostoevsky have this line often quoted: if there is no God, then everything is allowed. Right? Not that you take that view, but that is. So, the question is there a valid secular morality, or is it some sort of like leftover? And the second question is, if there is, what's our attitude to it? Does this create a joint basis of operation between religious people? Would we take that valid base on ourselves as religious people? That's basically the question that I want to ask. Often called that. It's a well discussed. These questions are well discussed in the realm of philosophy. There's a whole area of philosophy called ethics, which is normally defined as the question of not what is, but what should be done. And within ethics, there's another well-known realm of the relationship between religion, God, and ethics. There's actually recently two books came out, one by Rav Lichtenstein and one by Rav Amital. And so to a certain extent, the ideas that I'm going to be bringing tonight, even though I won't make many specific references, are based on an article in each of these books, one by Rav Lichtenstein dealing with the more philosophical side, and one by Rav Amital dealing with the question which I want to take on as the second question, which is I want to distinguish between the logical, philosophical question and the question of our intuition, our feeling, our gut feeling that certain things are wrong and certain things are right. So where does that come from? I look at it a little bit of our sources as to where does that come from. So Rav Amital focuses on that. So his article is called Musar TV. I distinguish between that feeling, that intuition, that experience of something being wrong or something being right.
For example,
For example, the moral outrage you might feel when you hear about a story of something terrible that somebody does. That's
natural morality.
But it's a natural morality feeling, right?
I mean, there's a feeling.
Okay, that experience, right? And I want to take that as a second. Yes. I'll touch on it very briefly. Okay. Now, actually, Carrie gave me a little bit of a challenge. Not in the context of this. But the other day, he was telling me about this speaker or this friend of his in Chabura, who when he started the talk, he simply explained, "I'm going to be arguing A, B, and C, right? I'm going to be proving it like this and that, and this, you know, and after that, I'll get on to this. And when I finish, you will know that A, B, and C." There's a part of me that very much wants to speak that way, and then there's the other part that wants to. There's a little bit of dramatic tension. I don't want to tell you what my conclusion is. I think the ideal of the dramatic tension is I ask the questions, and just before I actually make my point, everybody or most people in the audience have already just thought of it themselves and say, "Yes, he's right." So I'm going to take the first, I think. What I'm going to argue is that there is a valid, logical base for a secular morality. It does not depend necessarily on any religious assumptions, and therefore we should take it on board just as much as any secular person should take it on board. I will try to make the case for that, and the consequences of that are a potential for a dialogue, a partnership of all sections of Israeli society on these issues. Okay? Having said that, I want to consider some basic questions. Okay? I'm going to, they're all printed out on the sheet in the bullet. I'm going to go through these questions. None of these questions are easy. I'm just going to present these questions. The reason I'm going to it's too big a subject to get into each of these questions, but this is a huge subject, but I believe I'm trying to propose one specific new idea that is valuable and can be explained in a brief period of time. For that, I need the introduction to these questions. So what we need to do is understand these questions, but I won't be able to get into all the implications of these questions. Let's take the first question. The first question is actually a rewording of a famous question by Socrates. And it says, "Is doing good desirable because God commanded it, or did God command it because it is good?" So think a few seconds about that question, right? Now, we can think about it like a mitzvah, a specific mitzvah. Is the reason for the mitzvah, is the reason we do have the mitzvah, simply because God commanded it? Or is there some reason that makes it good that Kadosh Baruch Hu told us to do it? And that can apply not just to mitzvah, it can apply to everything.
Would you like a piece of cake or a piece of pie?
Definitely.
I don't know. I can't see how one could answer yes to this question. I find it very difficult to answer both. It may be very nice and easy and solve our problems, but I think it's very difficult.
Well, the first question before then,
usually,
did God create good?
Well, that's, you know, to analyze this question, you have to ask the question like that.
Yeah.
Right? Good might exist without people. Okay. So the next question I want to consider. So if everybody's understood this question, please stop me on these questions. It's important that I've made them clear. The next question is, Can God only do good? How can we conceive of the idea of Kadosh Baruch Hu not doing something good? Doing something... No. Is there some... What this question is really asking is there some sort of like force? Now, this is... Actually, I'm phrasing it in the way that has caused people to reject. To say the answer has to be... Of course you can do other things. Because it implies... Doesn't this... If I say that God can only do good, then it seems like there's a... He's limited. There's a force. There's some sort of rule book.
Unless you say
that,
that
says good.
He created good, saying that he only does good is like saying he is himself.
Self-imposed.
Saying he is himself is not a restriction.
Well, it actually couldn't have been otherwise. He couldn't have been otherwise. I mean, again, I don't like what... I don't like it. Frank Ross. Okay.
You're using your judgment value to decide what's good and think that God did something that's good. In your eyes, good. God doesn't have to say that it was good or bad. He did it because I needed to do it. You can interpret it whether you think it's good or bad or whatever. You say it's good and he says it's bad what I did. I did the thing because I know what I have to do because I see what's going on.
Okay, people have answered that way.
Good and bad don't apply to God.
God, right?
The definition of God is good, therefore anything God does is by definition good. Therefore, it's not he's not choosing to do good, it is that if God does it, by definition it's good.
So, look, one second.
Defined as whatever God does.
Look at the third question. Okay, the third question takes your view. The third question takes your view and says, basically, is good defined only by what commands? By what God commands? Does that mean that if he commanded us to murder innocent and harmless children, would that be good? Right? Now, there's a view that says that God, that good is simply that which God commands. Whatever God tells us to do, that defines good.
And nothing else.
According to that, this is called the command theory of ethics. Okay, just like to give it a name. And it's a view held by many, many sources, both in the secular philosophical world and in the global and non-Jewish world, and can be found in our sources too. Good simply means what God commands. That's the problem with that view. The problem that I find with that view is then I say, okay, so you can imagine a world where Kadosh Baruch Hu tells us to murder innocent children. No, not for a reason. Not for any reason. No. But most of the time, okay. Well, let's put Amalek aside for one second. We'll get back to Amalek. But the question, the point, the objection here says, not most of the time Kadosh Baruch Hu tells you that. What if Kadosh Baruch Hu told people that the thing I really want you to do is to cause suffering to everybody else? Does that make sense? Does that make sense? Surely there seems to be in our intuition something else that means good.
Why does it need to make sense to us? If he says to do it, shouldn't...
Would it be good?
Yes.
It would become good?
Yes.
I find that...
It's absurd.
I find that absurd.
Well, we don't see it from God's perspective. We don't know what he thinks.
And
if he's
bad, so you're asking
a
non secret
question.
Okay.
By definition, that returns to the previous question. You mean there's something that prevents us?
I think the first question is really
that you have two horns of a dilemma here.
Not at all.
Right. One says God can only be could only command things like help each other, and the other one and says so the problem is that. I know these are big questions. Let me present the question. As long as you have understood them, right? These are what, you know, then we can understand the dilemma, the horns of the dilemma here, and we can try to move towards the specific thing that I want to propose tonight.
Ellie, on the third question, yeah. I just want to comment that it could be that there are many good things which God does not command, but at the same time, he does not command to do any bad.
And then
different take on it.
Well,
totally different.
I think that the Gemara actually does relate to this specific question. If you want to just briefly look at source number one, which is actually part of a much larger discussion, I'm jumping here to the Hebrew, where it says number one, Amamar kol mitzvah midlon ishnei pisinai livnei noach nemra v'lo liYisrael. In other words, if a mitzvah, if there's some good, if there's some value that you could conceive of that wasn't mentioned in Har Sinai, could you imagine? Now, does that mean that only Bnei Noach are mechuyav in it, and the Jewish people are not? And basically, there's lots of implications in Hilchos Geirus and so on. And the answer is Leika Midam v'Yisrael Shari v'Enochi Aso. The basic implication is that there's no way that actually Har Sinai could remove a single obligation that we might have had if before Sinai had happened. Well, Bnei Noach were allowed to eat meat. The four Bnei Noach. But Har Sinai, there's all sorts of sort of like quite intricate situations that might occur for a ger as he enters Geras in the middle of a situation like that. And the Chachamim won't accept it, on the whole. There's machlokas about this, right? But the driving principle in most cases is that Har Sinai could only add to what we are required to do. Okay, so I've asked the questions that are normally posed on the religious side. Now the next two questions I want to ask actually cause a dilemma on the secular side. And I'd like to let's read through it. Is there anything solid, I'm looking at the fourth bullet point, is there anything solid or reasonable about human created morality? For example, common unconfirmed, this isn't necessarily true, knowledge says that Eskimos used to send out their older citizens to die once they were no longer useful. Does this not prove that human created morality is hopelessly relative?
I don't see how it proves that.
Well, the argument goes like this. Okay, let's human beings decide what good is. And then you look at human beings, and every human society seems to come up with something different. We think these things are abhorrent. The Eskimos, you know, that was a good somebody shomer masoret, right? Again, I don't actually know that this is true, but this is common, right? What?
The British helped us the Monga Day Alice is coming over 75
years ago.
So that's
okay. Any now, look at human society. You want. Right, I don't think it's quite as critical. Okay. No.
Anyway.
Well.
Right. And then
they do it
knowing that it's bad.
Okay,
I think
without one second without
all kinds of people were disposable.
So were the Greeks when it came to certain things.
If you want to, again, I want to just. Ladies and gentlemen, again, I can't answer.
We'll be here till next week.
Yeah. These questions, every single one of these questions are, every single one of these questions are very, very large and require a lot of thought. I want to just present the questions. I think people have understood the question that's being posed as maybe the major objection against the idea that human beings can create morality. But
you're questioning though whether morality created by humans is relative or are there absolute moral values, and most likely the positive things are relative but the negative things may be absolute. In other words, they all may agree that it's wrong to kill wantonly or to steal wantonly, but doing something positive such as this may be relative. You might be able to divide it up and find that there are certain
It might be possible to
things that are
in one way or another dig through this. Again, let me just present the question. Please forgive me. These aren't points that I created. These aren't views that I've raised for the first time. So allow me just to raise these questions. I want to raise these questions as a background to a specific point that I wish to make. A specific solution, one among other solutions. But the last question says like this. Basically, I'll phrase it in my own terms. According to the most radical secular view, there's not only no God, there's nothing but atoms and the laws of physics. That's it. We are nothing more than some product of a random process that is actually designed for survival. We're just like quite efficient survival machines as an end result of this random process. That's just the reality. I haven't made.
Survival is good.
No.
It's the only one
exactly.
That are the ones who survive.
Right. It just is. This is right. It just is. Right. No. No.
It's not a goal. It's just only ones left are the ones who survive.
Bertrand Russell argued that in this.
Right.
One second. The issue here is if that's true. That if I take that to mean what secular means, and it's an extreme. And in such a world, there is no good. Can't label good on anything. It's just there is no meaning. There is no purpose. We're just simply psychologically having trouble coping with the abyss of the meaningless of our universe. But besides that, you know, that's what secular really means, and you can't build any good or meaning in that. That's an extreme position, and I've now presented, I think, what if you take these questions as a whole, we've got problems. We've got problems on both sides. On one hand, we try to create a system of morality that says, oh, you know what, that's quite right. The secular side is hopelessly relative, and anyway, it really believes that there's nothing in the world, so, you know, it can't have a morality. And so, but what we've got to do is create morality based on what God says, and I show that there are problems there. Right, and the other side says, well, there's problems there, so that's like, you know, you can't, it can't just be based on God, so let's go back to secular, and then I'm stuck on two horns of the dilemma. And I want to try to resolve that. Now the next step that I want to do is go to take the following step, and ultimately, by going this, I will face the questions about Malek, Storm, you know, Lakeda. I can do this quite easily in English. I started by saying that there's a difference between ethics, which there's the question of what is and what should be. Let's focus on the question of should. I'm going to try and create some sort of like secular ethics. I'm going to say, can there be anything that I should do? What is anything that there's a reason for me to do good? And before I can get into that, I would like to say that some words are only part of a game. They only have a meaning within a specific set of rules. For example, if I said it's illegal to do something, everybody would understand that illegal doesn't have an absolute sense. There has to be a set of laws. None of this is that. It's illegal. So, the word should, is that a relative word or is it an absolute word? How would the word should be a relative word? For example, I say there is no morality. In an absolute sense. But if you're going to listen to Kadosh Baruch Hu, this is what you should do. So should becomes just a word within the system. In halacha, we would normally use words like chiyuv, right? Mitzvah, things like that.
That applies also to other systems. For instance, if people said that the ultimate goal, as your mother said, is survival,
then you should do it.
Right.
Right? Should becomes a word within a system. Outside, etc.
Right?
Right. The God's about right. Should, that was, it should or was, it should or was, it can be relative. Abba made it clear there has been a relative use of the word should and an absolute
what
word.
Is an absolute?
An absolute use of the word should is without reference to any system, you should do something.
What does that even mean?
It would mean I can find a really good logical argument, regardless of your intuition, your moral intuitions, why you should not hurt another person. Other than saying, referring to because of about you, or refer to some other goal you've set.
Well, that's
right.
It's just stupid. It's not a.
Wait a second, you're saying.
No, it's doing pain.
The goal of secular philosophy is
pain.
Sure.
I'm not doing survival. I'm not doing
survival.
No. I didn't say that.
No,
I haven't said that. I said I've raised a problem for that. In fact,
wait,
I'm going to argue.
Even if he does, it's only, he accepts that it's only for himself, not that it's an absolute.
Exactly.
Okay. The question has been a large part of the world of the discipline of ethics. Let's try to find a should in an absolute sense. But let me try to let me propose the following. As maybe I've biased the question, the word should is always relative.
Mm-hmm.
It's always relative. It's always so. Why would I not hurt somebody? Why would I want to help somebody? What would be the reason? Now, as we speak about reasons, what would be the reason for me to help somebody? And here I would say there is no should, and therefore it's a choice. It's simply a choice.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me clarify that a bit. Imagine. We'll take on board, for starters, because we want to find out whether there is a secular ethics, a world which is just like, you know, we said, only atoms and the laws of physics, nothing else. We are just survival machines. And I'm a creature in this world, and I'm hungry. I'm in pain. I can make the choice. I will normally, rationally, choose to extricate myself from this pain, from this suffering. But that's not an important point. What is important now is imagine there's two creatures in this world.
Mm-hmm. And each one takes the other
and
one.
And there's this other person is suffering.
What is important
is
what?
I'm just leaving up. There's two people, two creatures in this world. And I, and this person is suffering. This other creature has some need. It has some desire, which by which is being frustrated, which almost by the definition of desire means that it's suffering of some kind, right? No, it has a desire, and that desire is being frustrated. It can't have that desire. It loves some other creature, it wants that other creature to be good, that other creature, right? It's child, and that child is being taken away from it. Not saying what causes suffering, but whatever causes suffering for that creature, it could be very different, but there would be some form of desire and suffering, and this creature is in the suffering, and I choose. And now, what would be my motivation? What could tell me that I should help this other creature? I would answer, emotions aside, intuitions aside, there is such a thing as saying I choose to help that creature. There is no should for my helping that creature. Let's call that chesed. I don't want to call it good. Because good is a big, too big one.
When is it
chesed? To a certain extent, you could say a true choice. You could call it whimsical, right? But it is simply, I'm simply defining chesed, the decision, the choice to help that creature. To help the other creature. On no basis.
You don't make a choice on the other.
I see my pain. I know how much I hate being in pain.
Okay.
I choose to do that. Oh, simply I understand that creature. Forget about my pain. You might never have pain. I understand that creature. I don't want that creature to suffer.
That's sympathy.
No.
Empathy.
You're saying that's the map, the intuition, the core causes
yeah.
me to say that. But I'm defining chesed. Why? Let's say I have no such empathy. I just understand it.
You can't understand
it.
Loaded for people.
What?
You're saying we don't know what chesed is. You're just using it as a label.
I'm using
it.
Or
your choice.
Right.
Now, get free yourself of all your baggage.
Right.
Yeah.
That, I'm using that word label, that label chesed, for that
choice.
So that choice is a free choice. Now, once I'm in the decision, I could decide that what I'm going to do in my life is go around helping these creatures, all the creatures in the world. That within that system is lots of shoulds. But in other words, in order to be effective, we'll get into that.
Is there any cost to you of that act of help?
Maybe there is. Maybe there is.
So basically,
let's say there is.
There could be
gains. There's a cost.
And it all depends what that cost is.
Doesn't matter. Should I make that choice? I label that chesed.
There could be.
Now,
but basically, you're starting with an axiom of if someone else is suffering, he should be helped, and everything else.
That's should.
No, this is the axiom.
No, it's a definition.
That's chesed.
I'm labeling a certain choice, a certain direction of choice. Okay, as the word chesed. Okay.
Whoever has made a choice without any reason to do it,
I don't want it to suffer.
Definition of choice.
I don't want it to suffer.
Oh, well, that's really a big.
No sure. There's no sure. I just don't want it to suffer.
So suffering is a bad, and the opposite is a good.
No.
Where did you find the good?
That's after I made that choice. I don't want it to suffer. After that, I can call good, not in my suffering.
That means not suffering is good, and
that. After I made that choice, not before I made that choice. That is what chesed means.
If you hadn't made that choice, then you would not have made that choice to begin with.
I have yet gotten to good. I don't think I've gotten to good yet.
Not,
just saying that's chesed. Why? I chose not to choose God. I chose not to use the word good. But, you know, I could have created a word unrecognized by you.
Right? Is the man help who helps doing it out of a sense of helping the other creatures survive? If he only believes in survival as being the ultimate good, and by helping the suffering creature, he's going to help that creature survive. Or is he only interested in his own survival?
No, I'm only interested in that creature's... I'm interested in that creature being happy. I'm interested in that creature not suffering. I'm interested in that... You... Now, the point is, we respond to that with our own intuitions and gut feelings.
So
I separate them.
So are we defining good? We're not defining good.
No, we're not defining good.
Let me ask a question. Let me now ask this question. I would argue that I could build a secular morality based on that. The first initial action is a pure... It's just a choice. And then within that, I can start thinking about what exactly that creature wants.
At what point do you get to the concept of good?
Somewhere within that structure.
But if you don't have that in the first place, holding it all together, then at any point the person can say, I don't care about any of this, it's not worth it, and say, I've got new morality.
That's a choice, man. That's what a choice means. It's just a choice. And a person can say, I don't want to help them. You ask the person, you say, why should I be good? There's no such... I'm thinking quite right. I cannot answer why should I do chesed. I cannot answer why you should do chesed. That's a practical. That would be a selfish. I'm not talking about selfish situations. Let me now ask the next question. If I'm crazy,
I want to ask the opposite question. I've suffered through a situation.
Yeah.
I understand what the suffering is, and I can see that he's suffering. Situation. I want to put him out of his misery. I don't shoot him.
Okay. I've
ended his suffering, which is what I want to do. I want to end his suffering.
Yeah.
Okay. I've killed him. I've ended his suffering.
Okay, since you raised this already, let me raise this. Let me.
I call it chesed too.
Right. Let me ask the next question. How do I know that I want to help him, but it becomes very complicated? Now, this is, we say, let me try, I try to define suffering as wants, frustrated. But there's like the famous story about, like, you know, fat man, a woman, who walks into a cake store and wants every single cake in that store. But at the same time, he doesn't want to eat any of the cakes in the store. He wants not to eat the cake, and he wants to eat all the cakes. It shows that people, even the concept of want is a very complex concept, right? A question I've often raised: instead of shooting them, even after I decided that I want to help this person, do good for this person, what does good mean exactly? What if I gave him a pill to make him happy for the rest of his 120 years? But in a total la-la world, with no control whatsoever, but he'll be happy. Right? Is that good? In other words, even once I've said, wanting to help, even once I've decided what this custard is, it's a very complicated question. And let's say the history of ethics is 2,600 years old, we certainly haven't seemed to get many closer to good answers to this question. So we find ourselves fairly stuck with how to actually make it happen. So then, this is where I want to bring in, I think I've defined something that could be the basis of a secular morality. Okay. It could be a morality that even if you believe only in atoms, it doesn't matter. That person's suffering, I choose. You know? I know there's no meaning, I know there's no problem.
But it's very temporary,
right?
You won't always choose the same thing, and each person...
Whatever. But I can understand the concept of a chesed. But morality is the concept of chesed, as I've defined it, inside this world. Does Kadosh Baruch Hu have anything that he should do?
Well, you could say everything that he has been doing, he should do.
That's what I could say.
What?
Right, but that wouldn't conform to my normal... I would say Kadosh Baruch Hu has exactly the same... why does Kadosh Baruch Hu do good? Or chesed? Why does he do chesed? It's the same thing. It's purely a choice. He's not restrictive. And he's not... on the other hand, would it be chesed if he still made that person suffering? No, it wouldn't be chesed. Is that a limitation on Kadosh Baruch Hu? No. Because I simply define chesed as X. So the question becomes, does Kadosh Baruch Hu in his world do chesed? But there's no... I've neither created a force that's outside of Kadosh Baruch Hu that forces Kadosh Baruch Hu's hand. Simply created a definition of chesed that Kadosh Baruch Hu, and I say, the question is, does Kadosh Baruch Hu do that chesed? Is the world an implementation of Kadosh Baruch Hu doing that chesed? Or not? That's the question. And here I'm proposing... So basically,
actually, wait just a minute. The way you've defined chesed, that is not chesed. When God helps a person, it's not chesed, because the way you've defined chesed, so you've got two people where one is similar to the other.
So I was avoiding the empathy question. I said you can understand him. I can understand lots of ways. I can understand because I suffered,
so chesed,
or because I have full internal views into his mind.
In the secular morality of yours, not swatting a fly is equal to not killing a person.
No.
Well, if it's not empathy, what's the difference?
Because it's a matter of choice.
So choice.
I can the label chesed as taking a creature that is, you know, that I understand to be conscious and aware. And
we're not conscious on a level that God is, so that falls apart.
No,
right.
I don't. It's not related to the giver. It's not related to the understanding of the giver. It's not sympathy. I'm not talking about sympathy here. I'm talking about a simple, free, whimsical choice.
Okay, but if this is the basis of your morality, then really, since you haven't said what the subject of this chesed is, then it should apply to all living things, or maybe even past living things. Why don't we say this applies to a piece of, here, to this here. I should not cross this up, because it would be suffering.
It would not.
Yeah.
Okay. But I would call that a different label. I'd give that a different label. Chesed 2. Okay? I call your thing Chesed 2.
Okay.
This chesed one is taking creatures that are capable of understanding suffering, and of suffering, and being aware of their suffering, or being aware of their happiness, or being aware of love, or whatever it is, and making that choice.
Are you saying that there's no core belief system?
No, one second. What would the core belief system, what would the belief system come in? Yeah, I'm sort of looking at the time. I want to let me just make the main point, because I do want to hold my point. So,
no.
Don't tell people an hour. I want to at least discussion can go on from the back of my pleasure. But, I would say, what would emunah be in the system? Emunah would be a belief, a view of the world, a view of creation, a view on creation that says, my understanding of creation is that the whole purpose of creation, which is by a creator, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to do chesed, chesed one, right? Because any other specific chesed, chesed one, chesed to all these creatures, or as much as is possible without contradicting other things. Let me, sorry, allow me just at least to complete my point. And now, now I want to combine this. So now as I say that I've defined what chesed means, and I say that that emunah would be a view that whatever it may seem like, what is really going on is chesed for all creatures on the earth in as maximized way as possible. Then the problem goes back to the question, yes, what exactly is chesed? Well, I couldn't answer it. I have problems answering it. And so I think this is the way I want to get out of the dilemma that I presented at the beginning. The absolute concept of chesed does not depend on Kadosh Baruch Hu's command. But what it actually is, I am not capable of. There's actually three problems that I have. The first problem is I don't really know I'm sort of like fudging around in the dark trying to understand what it is that is good to a person. How do I help such a person? Do I give him the happiness drugs? Do I give him, you know, do I kill him, put him out of his suffering? Do I, you know, is freedom important for him? Is, you know, so he can at least, is meaning the most important thing for him to have, even if it causes him a lot of suffering? I don't know the answers to these questions.
Right.
It's
giving people things
to be slowly good. It's giving people. Maybe by that way it just becomes dependent on all. So what I'm arguing is that the core concept of chesed can be independent and logical, but its implementation requires a level of knowledge and understanding way above what we've reached so far.
Sure. So first of all, right? You said it was logical.
Yes.
The way you defined it was not logical, it was purely arbitrary. You said there is
a
choice.
It
wasn't made for any logical reason.
To say that I have nothing but this definition is a logical position. I'm not using your intuition. I'm not using your emotions. By saying I'm simply defining it as such, I'm avoiding all the paths that I'm not saying are invalid, but you might argue are invalid. I'm simply created, I've said there's a definition of chesed. I look at the world. It is a definition, an arbitrary definition. It's an arbitrary choice. I look at the world, I come to the conclusion that everything is about making this chesed. If I make this choice that I want to help another person, and I understand that the designer, the creator, the person who actually makes this existence be second by second, is also that his motivation, then the first thing I would have to do is understand, is try to learn from him and ally myself with him. That would be the religious aspect of it. I accept that there's a secular morality, but I accept an epistemological limitation on my, what I mean, I'll explain about epistemology in a second, an epistemological limitation on my capability to actually carry it through. And that, my epistemology is the study of how do I know things. So for example, I'm just cutting straight to, for example, Sodom, or their kingdom. It's often presented as struggle between morality and obedience. In other words, is Abraham going to do what's good, or is he simply going to listen to Kodesh Baruch Hu despite it not being good?
I assume that that's...
And I would say that the struggle is differently. I'm sorry. Let me just get this there. I would argue that the struggle is different. The struggle here is Abraham knows that the other side is good. He may not understand that the other side, why the other side is good. Right? It is a question of, do I really believe that everything that Kodesh, if Kodesh Baruch Hu is telling me this, it must be good. That is the emunah question. In other words, my study of the world, my study of Kadosh Baruch Hu's word, my interactions with Kadosh Baruch Hu, right, Abraham on a direct verbal level, I know that I can't see the whole picture. I know that sometimes, and to a certain extent I have to maybe discard this idea that human value is infinite. But, you know, I know that sometimes it might, maybe in Storm's case, this group of people might cause more suffering. I may not be in a position to judge that, but Kodesh Baruch Hu may.
Which case do I argue with Kodesh Baruch Hu?
That's a very big question, which I get in all the series of shiurim that friends are giving to the women right now, which is that there are some questions that are open ended. There are not one answer. Right? There are many possible paths. That's the quick answer. Right? And in some cases, it's well beyond my understanding. Like the case, there's nothing for me to argue. And in some, maybe there is. But even, for instance, Amalek. If there would be a direct command, because Baruch Hu says, this group of people needs to be removed, assuming I've gotten all the other things right, and I really know that he said this, and he means this people, and now I haven't just made up that I think, oh, I don't like the Palestinians, so they're the Amalek, right? But, you know, assuming it's really because of this people and this now, there is not, I would say there's not a dichotomy between right and obedience, but then it would be a matter of, do I really believe that all Kodesh Baruch Hu is trying to do is good, or might he have some other not good, not chesed? I've made a decision to do chesed, right? And Kodesh Baruch Hu is the only way I can find out what is chesed. That's only one of the issues. I don't know the facts on the case. I'm missing those facts. You can provide me the facts. And so, okay, yeah. Okay. Chesed 3.
And build my morality on that.
But it would just be Chesed 3. I wouldn't call
Chesed 3. That's
okay. Chesed 2 was crushing. Was good at crushing. It's crushing biscuit. And Chesed. But it's not the same. It's Chesed 3.
Right?
Yes,
it's
I get
exactly
that.
The same.
It is. That's what I mean by saying there is no absolute should. No, I'm saying that Chesed 1. I'm not saying there is no
sexual morality.
There isn't. It's only a matter of choice.
He's the whole premise of this.
Right? There is no should. I cannot give you a should, one, two, or three.
So then,
right?
Then we have a religious problem with it.
Why?
Because there's this thing called the Shem Mitzvot and Enoch, which someone who has never come across Judaism and has never seen that there's a beauty or whatever, and they could have grown up, you know, in been born in,
yeah.
in and sent by his parents to Hitler Youth.
Yeah.
And being taught exactly Chesed 3
yep.
as being right. And we judge him Chayav Mitam from our perspective. So then, according to
what's wrong with that?
Because why, by our standards, could we consider him guilty unless there's some kind of absolute morality?
Because I've made a choice. Because I've made the choice to do Chesed 1. Chesed 1 may logically lead me to punish this person, to enforce, right? Chesed 1 may logically, or alternately, Chesed 1, together with the understanding, an empirical understanding, right? Because Shbalko is also, the whole enterprise is all about Chesed 1, and the Emunah, right? Which is in a sense, really here of trust. The trust that also comes from God, and he says that person is Chayav Mita. Either of those paths might need that person
to
say for Chayav Mita.
To propagate our ideas, I understand the value of killing people who disagree. On the other hand,
no, it's problematic.
From God's perspective, God, with and this is maybe why Abraham needed to argue about Saddam, but that's a different thing. From God's perspective, there's these people who've never come across, who've never had the choice, and he is saying he's holding them. He's told us that whether they mean it or not,
that's not clear. To take that step within Chesed 1, you'd have to understand Halacha or Torah or Gemara or whatever, because. Because you're saying to understand what God wants isn't simple. Okay? You've immediately assumed that I'm going to go like kill him and all his children. I don't know. That's a deep question. You'd have to look at the words because it's both that I believe I've had with Kiddush Baruch Hu. You'd have to look. It's not clear the Chesed 1 says that you'd immediately go and put them to death. I've only got a commitment to Chesed 1.
No, I'm not talking about your commitment. I'm now looking at it completely from the other side. I'm not looking at this logically. I'm looking at this as a religious Jew.
Yeah.
And I'm saying, as a religious Jew, there's a contradiction with your premise that there is that morality has to be arbitrary. Because God will hold, in the Olam HaEmes, accountable someone who never came across Chesed 1 and only came across Chesed 3 for not having realized on their own that maybe there should be a
Chesed 1. I would argue first of all that it's not clear that God holds him accountable. That's something that if you're saying I'm looking at this from a religious Jew, then we have a lot to study on that. That's a long way to go right away to say he's accountable. I didn't necessarily say that person's accountable. How do you know Kodesh Baruch Hu holds this person accountable?
Because he would come and test blood, I will hold him accountable for the blood.
It may be required to put him to death.
So that is a requirement.
No. But I think God would. As I understood, when he dies, he will get punishment for it.
That's a totally different question entirely here. I can't answer that question. I'm not answering the question of believe or be damned. Right? you don't believe, how could it maybe because the Shpoko takes into account that he goes to Chesed Olam HaMet, he takes into account, he was brainwashed by Hitler Youth. Right? Tinoch HaNishba. Why can't Tinoch HaNishba apply to Kohen too? I'm not, he doesn't tell me what it does exactly, how he conducts those things, but many levels of assumptions further down. I'm just trying to create a system. I'm trying to create a core system based on definition that can make sense for me as to what the basic, where the first step is a step of choice. I would argue there's a question that I should have raised a little earlier. What causes the view that says right and wrong is what Kadosh Baruch Hu tells you to do, why should I listen to Kadosh Baruch Hu? And that could also be a choice. There's a choice. I choose to take on board everything that he's demanding from me. And all should apply from that. I'm just trying to create a simple, I'm trying to create a simple thing. I think that this to some extent solved some of the dilemma that I raised earlier, because instead of creating a dilemma between right and wrong, between a secular morality and a non-secular morality, there is a acceptance of an absolute definition of chesed, which could be accepted by on a secular level, but what I call an epistemological or practical limitation that involves a relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu, understanding Kadosh Baruch Hu as a source of knowledge, as a source of capability to making it happen.
But the mean is that there's always choices.
Yes. It's always the first step is simply a choice. Simply a choice. I choose. There's actually two paths. One could be I choose, my primary choice is I choose to help other people. I choose to do chesed. I choose. Right? I choose to make it good for them. Another choice could be I choose to just listen to Kadosh Baruch Hu. Right?
If they're secular and they're choosing to do good, you're saying there's a problem with the practicality, therefore they should look at the religious view.
But
they don't believe in a Kadosh Baruch Hu,
but
why should I listen to you?
I know, because
they can pick them up.
Okay. First of all, I've now got a basis. We can now create a common base, and we could work together. Now the other thing is, I'm going to wrap up a little bit, you know, because I think it's important to stick to a little bit of the time frame. When I was a child, tie this together. when I was a child, I actually, my father, Alav Shalom, passed away when I was 14, so I didn't get a chance to question him directly. So it's obviously long conversations with my mother, right, about many of his views. And one of the things that as I grew up, I was very aware, my father, Alav Shalom, he had two doctorates, but one of his doctorates was in law. In fact, he spent a lot of his time talking about the interrelationship between Roman law and Talmud. And that caused me a lot of trouble. At some stage in my development, caused me a lot of trouble. What is this study of Roman law, right, and how there's parallels in land law and even in marriage law? How can you even assume that there should be a parallel? I think that what I'm trying to present is, to a certain extent, answers my question. Maybe I add one more point. I remember learning Baba Batra. It's a long masechet, it's an involved masechet, and almost no reference to Pesukim. You can see all the little circles of the Pesukim alongside the Gemara, and Baba Batra, you can go through the whole huge involved sections and almost. You know, Chazal say, you know, Hare Harim Tulim Al, you know, mountains built on a hair strip. And I think that the answer I would say is that there is a common quest. There's a lot to figure out. Large part of halacha, large part of the Talmud, is dealing with how to create a society that is fair, that is just, that is good, despite the fact that, you know, sometimes both sides feel that they're victims. The suffering would be caused on both sides. I think the paradigmatic Christian answer is often, no, let's just be good. Let's just give care and love. And turn the other cheek. I'm not saying it's true about the way Christian thinking. It's obviously much more involved, but we often see sense things about that. So I'll set that up as a straw man. Our answer has always been, there's always conflicting goods. There's always it's very, very difficult to get down to how to make a good society. And a large part of the Gemara is about that. You know, how it says, if you want to develop your sense of Musar, you should learn Baba Batra, they say. Right? Because that all that deals with is how to make how do we handle these things? And that, and the concept that this is actually, on the one hand, something very unique to us, because we've got the world of the Torah and our traditions, and we start with Abraham, whose whole goal, you know, goal was Lech Lecha, Tzadkei Hashem, Tzadkei Hamishpat. But it's a shared quest, and ultimately there's a lot to be. There's no reason why different attempts to make a fair society shouldn't. Well, why there can't be a dialogue here? Why there can't be interactions between them? I've also done a lot of research on the opposite side. You know, the influence of our Talmud on specific Talmudists. Who then went on to have large influences on English law, and thereby, you know, much, you know, concepts that exist in the world at all. And so that's the specific idea that you know, how I come to term with, and I think also gives me a little bit of an insight into my father's life goals, and to a certain extent something that I feel very relevant to me. I'm very honored to be able to share these ideas with you this evening. So thank you very much. Yeah. Anybody who needs to leave, please.
The title of this evening have been, is religious morality binding on a secular individual, or does it need to be a secular morality binding on a religious church?
I think that for the religious morality to be binding on the secular individual, the question would be something that I often even look at as an empirical question. We have to accept that there is a designer, that there is a God, that somebody's created us. And that, and despite what we often sort of see the problem of tzaddik v'ra, or the problem of evil and suffering in the world, as an answer to be given to questions should they arise. And I'm arguing that it's not. It's a fundamental, and the basis of our emunah is seeing the world as, despite everything that's bad, is either from the choices of human beings, and that choice is required by other considerations, or there has to be some sort of reason. A basic understanding is that what the creation is about is an act of chesed, and a secular person has to accept both those things. If they would, then yes, that may be a way out of a rather hopeless. You know, after you get to that first stage, I want to help people. Where to go from there is very, I would say, depressingly difficult. You know, how do I actually make it happen? I would say Amalek is Amalek would be a primary example, yeah?
No,
good. Okay, so give me a different example.
Well, I mean
Let me take that example. But the answer would be that the answer would be an understanding of the human. It's basically what I would call epistemological humility. It's something that seems not to be built in to the whole structure of rational thought for the last 2,600 years. What I mean by epistemological humility is a very, very reasonable and rational understanding that I've got a very limited perspective, that I see very little of the global picture.
So there you can see the long term effect might be a good thing or something. Let's give you another example. The last month of Daffy Omi. They describe, again, it's distasteful, pedophilia in Thailand.
First of all,
good,
that,
then that's not legal.
First of all, that question, okay.
And because I would claim that that is evil, and I would feel if the only way to prevent that would be to be a vigilante, I would say be a vigilante. You know, I would say that is something you need to fight against.
I think that the answers there are, there's many, many levels of answers there. And I really, again, maybe the difference that you might be alluding to is there's also sometimes decisions made by human beings trying to understand Kadosh Baruch Hu's words. Now, that may be a distinction between the Soto example that you gave and this example, depending on how you view how you view the decision, the decision making
process.
Right. But the other thing you have to understand is that if I want to create if I am really serious about creating a society, creating good, I need to create a whole society that is good. To create a whole society that is good, first of all, I'm not by myself. There's a historical perspective. There's a consensus issue. You mentioned the word vigilante. What happens when I believe that let's say I was one of the 71 people on the Sanhedrin, and I'm absolutely convinced that the other 70 people are all wrong. But I believe that they are condoning pedophilia. Will the good ultimately be maximized? There may be cases where the good would be to split off and form a new religion, or maybe shoot them all. I don't know. But I think that a more mature view would normally say there's a lot involved here. There's other views. There's a whole perspective. And on the specific question that you've raised, I think that one could say that you've got to look at very, very different societies. You've got to look at societies where women were weak and defenseless.
And
it's not so simple. Not so simple. Well, you might demand that in today's generation, Rabbanim would not allow marriage under the age of 18. But you know what? In all it happened. Right? That's all you could say in the context of, if it was applied in today's context, if somebody condoned it in today's context, I think we would be very angry. But it's very difficult to understand that context.
From your perspective of how culture is today.
That you know, women learning Torah tomorrow, and you can say, well, you know, women today, whatever. To me, that's an evil.
I think that's why figuring out how to make the world good is a tremendous struggle. Because Kadosh Baruch Hu hasn't come along and said and given me a solution for all situations. The Torah does not strive to provide a solution for all situations. It makes a lot of statements. It gives stories in many cases so that we can delve the depths of what's right and wrong and the priorities ourselves. But it's a struggle. And in certain circumstances, some people will believe that this is an absolute, and others will argue that it's an absolute.
And you're saying basically that morality is such that if we all agree on the good, we want to help, the secular world wants to help, and the Kadosh Baruch Hu also wants to help to make the better society, we as the religious Jews can learn if there is anything that is not said in the Torah and the secular person has it, we should listen to him.
I think that very much so. I think that there's a lot, not, I wouldn't simply say if Kadosh Baruch Hu hasn't said about it, I should listen to
it.
I think that there's tremendous areas of common ground. Maybe because I find that what Kadosh Baruch Hu has prioritized, if a secular person has also prioritized that, if
so
they're secretized, then there's no reason on earth we shouldn't be figuring it out together.
But we've agreed on the good.
We haven't agreed on the good even within our group. We haven't agreed on the good.
Round the table.
Yes.
We have not agreed on what we as opposed to, okay, in different societies.
And the question you might ask is, why in that case, if I'm proposing the relationship with Kadosh Baruch Hu as providing that insight, why doesn't he go all the way? Why doesn't he explain everything to us? Why doesn't he answer all our questions? And there's a good, and there's many good reasons for why not that. In other words, he provides us with a lot of insight, which we consider tremendously valuable, which many have accepted, either because they've accepted these axioms or even without accepting the axioms today, right? And axioms that clearly did not exist in Greek or Roman society at all form the fabric of what people consider morality today. But, yes.
And the ability to deal with it.
And we're left with huge questions that I would even say B'chiyah Chofshit is very intricately linked in with not having all these answers. And in some cases, I don't even think there is an answer of which one is right and which one is wrong. Which one is the better?
So then why are we wasting our time on secular morality?
Because we have a lot in common. Because
it's
a struggle, it's a common struggle.
But there really isn't it.
What? No, no. Human endeavor, whatever you like, where you think that God didn't go far enough and human moral investigation has taken much further than God ever took. I mean, I can think of a few, but I'm just wondering.
I would argue yes on two accounts. First of all, Chachamim see things like Eshet Yifat Torah. This book allows you to take, basically, if you don't like some of these pedophilia issues, you know, what about Eshet Yifat Torah? Right? Here's a situation of Kadosh Baruch Hu allowing you to basically, it's a sort of condoned, you know, warring.
Yeah, but he doesn't command you to do that.
But that's the point. Chazal took cases like that and said, the Torah is given in a context where it cannot succeed in imposing its will entirely, and therefore minimizing damage control is to take her in, wait a month, halacha A, B, C, not D, but I sort of like an acceptance of failure in those terms, which I today can say I will 100% put to death anybody, any soldier who touches an enemy, and Chazal would have the power to do that. A second thing that I think that I would argue is that taking an idea of Rav Kook's is that certain values over time you could look at it become revealed. In other words, some things that didn't seem to bother people so much 2,000 years ago that I believe our Kadosh Baruch Hu wants from us, maybe in the realms of equality or freedom of speech or what, things like that, but weren't put as top priority then, I might today say the world has come to see this. There's a certain light that has appeared over the generations, and I can either choose to say Chadashim Ikarov Baal, right, I reject this, or I say no, this is actually a good and positive development of Kadosh Baruch Hu's will in the world, and therefore I take on this on board to further degree than maybe
Chazal.
Are you
implying that the fact that Hashem didn't talk about this, if we talk about the example you gave, the earlier example, which would be included now in a modern body of study called the IHL, the International Humanitarian Law, the Law of War. Okay, so there Hashem talked about what would happen if you took a woman prisoner, but in that context, killing prisoners, killing non-combatants and killing prisoners was basically accepted. Now it's not accepted, it's part of a IHL. And the retort might be, no, IHL is wrong. If Hashem wanted IHL, he would have mentioned it.
I think you could say it's wrong, you could argue, right? You could argue, but I don't think it would be the argument that he would have mentioned it as strong is a good argument. In other words, that's like saying if Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to make Eshet Yifat Torah, he would have said it, right? There isn't that assumption. Chazal did not take that assumption that, you know, if God wanted us to fly, he would have given us wings, right? It's impossible. I don't think that's the consensus Chazal view, right? The consensus Chazal view is that it's very possible that things were allowed or enabled because conditions then could not have otherwise allowed it. And that could even apply to the right of things. So I think the second argument I would reject, just for saying, no, it must be right because Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't forbid it, I don't think so. I don't think so.
The whole world of slavery.
What?
America, they argued it in the Civil War, a slave.
I think Chazal had to do the slavery. I think Chazal had to do the slavery.
Slavery was given a stamp of approval by God and by the Bible.
I think Chazal
had to
do the attitude to slavery. Chazal had to bigamy. You know, example after example, you can look at this Kaddish Baruch Hu giving a stamp of authority. I think the very fact, the very way of looking at the world of the Torah, the Torah Shabbat Peh, the power of Chazal and so on, is that it's never meant to be understood that way. That simply because Kaddish Baruch Hu allowed then, therefore that's the last word on whether it's right or wrong. And that could also, that could be an answer to barring people from the Torah.
That puts you on very dangerous ground.
Why?
Because all the people who say, you know, the Bible was the Torah was right those days, for those days, and nowadays they're not obligated because our society is so different.
No, I think that the answer would be that there's a process. That there's a process that we, the Torah Shabbat Dichtav, if looked at in a Karaite literal way, would be out of date, if you wanted to put it that way, right? But that's not the way the Torah has built into it, right? The injunction to of the Shofet Asher Yehiyeh Bayamim Ahem, right? And for him to build the structure.
Code of morality.
It's not a simple question. The answer has never been right. The basic, the prior, a deep understanding of the text, which out of that, you
have to take into account.
I
have a theory.
In other words, if you can posit that the Chazal have the power to pronounce laws now, that will be an evolution, so to speak, of moral behavior inside the Torah. You have to deal with what was the moral statement that was being made that is apparently le dore dorot, even if not impractical. There must be some meaning to that.
I think it so happens that three years ago I took on that question. I took on Prusbul and also all those questions, and I think that my answer is that the process that Chazal do is a process of if you enact a quizbol, it's only because you have found a value that you understand from the Torah,
yeah.
And you believe that what I'm doing is ultimately taking that value that I do see ultimately in what the Torah is trying to do, and I believe that I'm enacting a direction. And I said, then I raised the question: look, how many people claim, yes, we're just the next step. Right, you know, you could look at Catholic or whatever, you know, attitudes that you want, and the answer is that Chazal, it's not just that you can't make changes, it's always out of a deep sense of a specific value that I can find, that I'm very convinced from the Torah text itself that is being expressed there, yeah. I try to leave Chesed 1 out. I don't try to leave things like Calvinistic or this or that out of the definition. I try to say Chesed 1 simply minimizing pain, minimizing suffering, and doing good, giving pleasure, giving giving, not as good. So, no, no, making, well, okay, no, no. No, no, no. Being increased, I want to try to create four basics there, right? Minimizing suffering, increasing pleasure in the sense of love and, you know, the well-being, meaning, and freedom. Even those four are not core. They're an attempt I made for looking at the world and the Torah of what might be those four, the core. But my definition of Chesed 1 is very, very minimalist. Very minimalist. It's simply some sort of well-being, non-suffering of another creature.
Why don't you start with survival? Why can't that be your starting point?
Because I know that survival is only one of them. I know that survival is only one of them. As soon as I start getting into this bomb, as soon as I go past my initial decision to do for well-being, lack of suffering, I'll carry off. Maybe survival, maybe just ending it for is the best. I know that I immediately see that there's tons of different values vying for
And if you look at the three things that it's better to die, which is survival is less important. Survival seems to be pivotal as the fourth principle of Judaism. But if you look at what the top three are, you've got idolatry, in other words, as a consequence of propagation of the name of God. You might have a form of a sexual morality,
okay.
That isn't actually what we find today in sexual morality. It's something a bit different.
What are you not letting me build?
Men can get away with lots of women's hearts, that kind of thing. And you've got not killing.
Listen, what you're not allowing me to do? What you're not allowing me to do is to build a tower, a pyramid. From a philosophical abstract.
Sorry, you can't build a tower when you have a base
okay.
That vague.
No, I know. What you're not allowing me to do is you're always giving me examples from inside the system, deep inside the system. There's ten assumptions between my basic initial location. I'm trying to create an abstract philosophical base. And from there, take step by step.
But what steps have we taken? You admitted that even back when you first introduced the concept, you have no idea where to go from there unless you make the assumption of emunah.
No, I say
so
I don't know.
Where
is
this tower idea coming from?
No. 1 second.
This tower right. Idea seems unrealistic.
I think that the step that it goes the tower system really goes. I don't think that Lisa. My point here is that I'm not immediately jumping into the details of Judaism. You are asking me the questions. You're asking me questions on Shiva Mitzvot B'nei Noach, which are part of the Jewish system, even if it's looking at what the Shiva, the rest of the nations are required to do. It's still logically it's part of the Jewish system. Shiva Mitzvot B'nei Noach. Right. In other words, we either believe the Kaddish Baruch Hu gave it, or sources which we didn't manage to get into, see it as some sort of extraction from logical principles. But you're immediately asking from this more developed point, which has lots of steps. Assumptions is not a word I want to take right now. Lots of steps along the way. I'm trying to work over here. I've got problems that I haven't resolved. You know, back on the most abstract level, and I'm trying to solve those. Next would be not an assumption, but a rational grounds for believing that Kadosh Baruch Hu is also interested in Chesed 1.
That's not rational.
Next would be no accepting the question of is this really what he said? Right? And there are many steps along the way. Right? I believe each of those have to be approached rationally. I believe each of those have good answers, but I don't think I can immediately take a question to, you know, say, ah, but what about feminism, or what about this?
No, I want to talk about feminism. I was trying to address it, maybe I misunderstood what
okay.
you were saying. But
thank
I
you very much.
I made an arbitrary definition of passive voice.
Yeah.
And you said that there's a relationship between what God wants and passive voice. And I'm saying, where do you get that from?
That is the immediately next step. The next step
was an assumption.
Okay. I don't believe it's an assumption. My next, it's my reading. It's my reading of. Okay. Fair enough. Fair enough. No, because again, the problem here is that no. No, I don't believe so. Right. No, Lisa, the problem with any of the cases that you bring up, Lisa, the problem with any of these cases you bring up is that, they're mired in detail. None of these cases can be discussed without the context. None of these cases can be discussed without, you know, the specifics of that case, the other sides to it. That's why they're not good cases to ask the question. How do I get to the next step? The belief that Kadosh Baruch Hu is interested in the Chesed One. I would argue, looking at the world in a deep way, not you know, not stopping at the childish, you know. Well, why do you allow this, you know, or allow a child tantrum?
I completely agree that it is a hugely basic concept of the Torah, and I think that people who ignore it as a basic concept of the Torah are getting things wrong. But I do think that the groups who are prepared to throw stones or something because of some thing that I have no idea what it's coming from, they think they're doing.
No, it's not that. They do, but they believe that
all. It's ideologically necessary. For the greater good of God, yes, but not necessarily for Catholic others.
I would say that as a guided perspective.
I don't think they're doing it because they love you.
Thank you very much.
Ended more questions than we started.
Now, and then he introduced us to our